Hey, Zero Block 30 listeners, you can find us every Tuesday and Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Prime members can also listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Quality sleep optimizes recovery, helping professional and everyday athletes perform their best. Only the Sleep Number Smart Bed is proven to improve the quality of sleep and provides valuable insights that can be used to support overall wellness. Talent on a college team allows the best players to outperform their opponents, but in the NFL, everyone is talented. Players entering the draft need every competitive edge they can get, starting with quality sleep. Training will only get more intense as players transition to the pros, so to optimize recovery, they can rely on Sleep Number for consistent, high-quality sleep. Experience game-changing sleep with a Sleep Number smart bed only at a Sleep Number store.
We are going to be talking Syria. This is our Syria special. And to give you a little primer before we really get going with the whole squad, I'm joined by Kate and Cons. But before we really get going, we have Adam Kinzinger coming on, sitting congressman from Illinois. We have an EOD officer who has been and spent time on the ground dealing with IEDs in that situation. Both of those interviews are going to be coming later. But we want to dive into it, go straight into the business. So, Kate, give us a little S2 for our civilian listeners. S2 is the intel. Give us some intel of what's actually setting the scene, what's going on in Syria.
Yeah, so Syria has been in a civil war for 7 years now, and there's three main components of it. The soldiers who are loyal to President Assad against the rebels who are against Assad and want him out, and then the Islamic State, ISIS, has also been thrown into the mix. And to make matters more complicated, each of these groups is backed by other countries in different ways, and it's just kind of become this crazy mess. And how did we become involved? I think a lot of people are wondering.
And that's really, I mean, it's a tough situation because you have, on one side, you have Iran, you have Russia. It's really just a dick measuring contest, I think, and in a lot of ways of who's going to back down first, who's not going to back down. These types of things have been happening for years. I mean, this isn't the first time that chemical weapons have been used on the citizens of Syria. It is the first time that we've struck those compounds. But Cons, what do you think? What do you got?
Well, I think anytime you're talking about chemical weapons and you see these pictures, especially of these children that are affected by these chemical weapons, you have a real visceral, guttural reaction. And I think that certainly affects your way of thinking when you want to decide, what are we going to do with this country? Well, obviously, I don't think as America, we can just sit back and knowing this is happening, just allow it to continue to happen. And luckily, we have our allies with us this time. Britain, France decided to join up with us and get involved. So I think overall, it was the right thing to do. And I think it certainly helps President Trump's case, the fact that France and Britain were involved as well.
Okay, what do you
because
think?
it doesn't just look like, oh, there goes that man Trump again, you know, just running up, spouting off the hip and firing weapons because he wants to have, you know, the biggest dick on the block. So
right.
I think it was certainly justified when you put all that together.
Okay, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, do you mind if I read this tweet? Marty Scoveland Jr. has been on the show before, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he's a journalist who covers a lot in the Middle East. And I read a tweet from him, just this quick thread that kind of summed up. I'm like, this is kind of how I feel about it, too. But he said, I'll never forget seeing the video of a Syrian man who was away on business for the afternoon in another town who returned home to find his wife, kids, nearly all of his extended family, and most of his neighbors gassed to death. And one afternoon, everything he valued. Oh, shit. Hold on. Sorry. Basically, he talks about like how awful that in life ripped away from him. I can't imagine wishing that on my worst enemies. It's as close to hell on earth as I can imagine. The shock on his face, the despair, it will stay with me. Weapons of mass destruction are not an acceptable means of waging war. And Assad should thank his lucky stars that the coalition forces didn't drop something right on his forehead tonight. That all being said, this is a slippery slope, and I'm not confident in current leadership to navigate these waters. I guess we'll see what happens in time. But it's not that I'm not confident in the military leadership and leadership to do the right thing, but I think myself and a lot of us are weary because we've also been stuck in a quagmire of our own in the Middle East for quite some time, and it's like, we barely have a handle on that, where that's going. What is our end goal here? Why didn't we just take out Assad? Like,
yeah.
I think regime change is a really hard thing to do. We've experienced that in several different places. I mean, you have Libya that goes into a complete quagmire after we remove Gaddafi. I just think that that kind of shit is a slippery slope. What he said is we can't be involved with constantly changing regimes. And I think that Assad is a piece of shit. And I understand going after the chemical spots. But I think it's way too early to declare this to be a success because we don't know. I mean, when we had Secretary of State Kerry, we had Obama saying that all chemical weapons were removed from Syria. That was bullshit. You have Tim Kaine, who was the vice presidential nominee for Hillary Clinton, going out and say that President Trump doesn't have the authority to make a unilateral strike, but had no problem, was not vocal whenever the Obama administration went out and made a unilateral strike against American citizen of Anwar al-Awlaki in Yemen. So, yeah. I mean, you cannot have it both ways, and I feel like as a political spot at where our country is at, we have to get to the point where we're saying we are going to apply equal rules across all measures. The Democrats coming out and say that this strike is not authorized by executive branch, but then continuing to allow President Obama, who had more strikes from drones or more missile strikes than any president in U.S. history, is such bullshit. It's just bullshit.
And I think, as you guys will hear, and Congressman Kingsinger made a great point, like, you know, this isn't a situation where I think the president needs to get the input of all the members of Congress and the Senate. It's a decision. I don't believe he took it lightly. He consulted with his military leadership as well as the other leadership within the executive branch. And I do believe it seems like it was a sound decision to go in and strike these facilities.
All right. Well,
but
speaking
I do agree. We do need to have a plan beyond this. We can't just bomb these facilities and say, okay, mission's accomplished. That was good, but the mission isn't accomplished. It's not over yet. We got to do something else.
Well, me, Kate, and Collins are just some dickheads with a microphone. Let's talk to somebody who actually has a little bit of sway. Kinzinger, if you don't know, he also sits on the Foreign Relations Committee. So even though we don't have a Secretary of State, there is many people on the executive side of the branch and in Congress who have a role of doing diplomacy abroad. Let's hear from one of those people, and Adam Kinzinger. All right, now back on the show. I'm pleased to have Congressman Adam Kinzinger. He's back. He's back in action. Lots of big news talking about Syria. You're making the rounds. I texted you this morning and I asked if you'd come on, and you were nice enough to do it, so appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Anytime.
So last night we got the big announcement, obviously, that President Trump had ordered the strike on Syria. As a member of Congress, what goes through your mind whenever you're seeing an announcement like that?
Well, I think, first off, there's pride that we have a military that's capable of doing this with relatively little risk, which I think is important to note. But secondly, you know, I think I've been asking for a long-term strategy in Syria for a while. We haven't gotten that in the last administration, and we're not getting it in this one. But when it comes to the issue of actual chemical weapons, I think we have to hold strong to the fact that chemical weapons have no place in this world. And as I've said, there needs to be strikes where the cost exceeds any benefit the regime gains. And I think that happened last night. I think I would have probably had a few wider strikes, maybe into some Syrian airfields, but there is no doubt that the destruction that came to the Syrian regime in terms of their chemical weapons use exceeded any benefit they gained.
As a member of Congress, were you guys brought in at all by the executive branch on what was going to happen or how it was going to go down?
No, so maybe the leadership had, but here's kind of my view on Congress with that. I think the Constitution is very clear that our job is to declare if a state of war exists and to fund the military, and we can use the funding things to kind of set policy. Where I get concerned is in every move by the U.S. military, there are members of Congress that say we need to be brought into that. Well, look, there's 535 of us between us and the Senate. There should not be 535 commanders in chief. So while I think the president acted legally under his authority under Article 2 to do this, if it comes to, which is not going to happen, but, you know, 200,000 troops in Syria or something, of course, then Congress needs to be brought in. But for something like this, holding strong to the Chemical Weapons Convention, I think the president was within his authority to do it.
Nikki Haley today went on and she spoke to the Security Council about how just terrible the chemical weapons are and their use. Why do you feel like it's appropriate that America still has those stockpiles of chemical weapons as well? Do you think we should get rid of ours?
No. I mean, look, it's the same reason we have nuclear weapons, but we don't want other people to have nuclear weapons. We are a responsible member of the world society. You know, we believe that somebody like Iran, for instance, or North Korea shouldn't have nuclear weapons because they've shown a propensity to use them, and it's not in our interest. So, look, when you have Syria using chemical weapons on the battlefield repeatedly, I think that's a big problem, and an unstable regime in a very unstable area. And the other point is this. In 2013, the Russians told us we're going to have Syria get rid of all their chemical weapons, and they certified that they did, but they hadn't.
And you mentioned that President Trump's administration hasn't had a long-term plan for Syria. Where would you like to see us go as of now? I mean, making the strike is a big deal,
sure.
But what's our next step if you are the guy running it?
Well, if I could go back in time, which I can't, I would have a end of Syria that includes, or an end of the war that includes the end of Bashar al-Assad. I would have supported the moderate rebels much more broadly. But that said, the war is not in that position now. I think there has to be a UN-brokered ceasefire, as that's in progress. I think there's no doubt that Syria is not going to look the same when this is all over. There will be areas under probably Turkey's influence, under more Western influence. And frankly, probably under the regime influence in Russia, although I'd rather see that regime run by not Bashar al-Assad. I don't think there can be peace with him in power. But I think basically, bottom line, there will be a long-term interest for a lot of different people in Syria, but it's going to have to be a brokered peaceful solution.
That being said, do you have any reservations about having that strike with no Secretary of State in place?
Yeah, it would have been nice to have a Secretary of State for sure. And, you know, one
in
of the
an ideal world.
Exactly. One of the things the Secretary of State can do is have the consultations with our allies, as John Kerry did when we were going to strike in 2013. I know he made the rounds and was able to bring a lot of allies on board for that. So, yeah, it's a concern. And that's why I hope the Senate pushes forward with the nomination of Mike Pompeo. I know Mike well. And despite some of the things I've heard on the media about him, I can tell you he's a very good and thoughtful person.
With that, who is doing the rounds now? If it's not the Secretary of State, is it the acting Undersecretary of State who's doing all those things?
Yeah, I don't actually know the answer to that question. And my guess is there are folks within the actual administration, within the president's circle, maybe Nikki Haley, who knows who's actually doing it, maybe undersecretaries. But yeah, as you mentioned, it'll be good to actually get a Secretary of State in place. And but this is all part of normal churn of any administration. This one, it just seems to happen a little more here, obviously.
You think that hurries up the confirmation process for Pompeo?
You know, I think that's a question for, frankly, the Democrats. It seems like there will be at least a few of them to support Mike's nomination. If he gets out of committee, if he's nominated out of committee, it'll be faster. If it has to go to the floor for a fight, it'll take a little longer. But, yeah, I don't think this is going to drag on forever. I think both sides of the aisle recognize that, as we did under President Obama, that this is an important position to have in place.
And from everything you've seen, just to wrap things up over the last, I guess, getting closer to 24 hours now, do you feel like this strike was successful?
I do. I feel like it was successful ultimately, and of course, what it wanted to target. But I think it sent a very strong message, which is, yes, broadly, Syria still is a mess. But when it comes to things like standing for something as a nation, like banning the use of chemical weapons, we made a very strong statement. And importantly, we did it with our allies. So who knows what the reaction will be. But I think, you know, as I think it sucks to be Russian today because your pride's wounded and there's not much you can do to come back to it.
Do you think that there's going to be a whole lot of backlash from Russia? What do you imagine happening from there?
I think they're ticked. You can see by their disinformation campaign, they said they're putting out that they shot down 71 cruise missiles. They didn't. They're putting out that it was the British Special Forces that did this chemical weapons attack. And then they said there was no chemical weapons attack. So, look, obviously they need to get their message straight. It is bad for them, but I don't expect any retaliation. The thing we have to remember, this isn't the old Soviet Union. It's really an army that has a few front-loaded good units, and then it's a conscript army that's failing. And now, while I don't want confrontation with Russia, we can't think of them as basically our equal because they're not.
I love it. And they're, I mean, the Russians are going after me. I'm on Twitter all the time, and having 2,000% trolling increase is not something that I enjoy. all those bots coming at me again. I hate it.
No, and think about this. I mean, that's the point. If we weren't onto something here, you as a veteran who you know stood to support your country and defend your country, they're sitting here going, they're against everything like that. They're saying that this was a false flag attack and building into the conspiracy theorists in this country that buy into these false flag theories. It's really sickening. And that's why it's important for folks like you and I to fight back against it and say, look, this is ridiculous. And not only is it just stupid to listen to, it's really harmful to the future of the country.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show again, Congresswoman. We appreciate it. And as always, you look handsome in a quarter zip. I wish our listeners could see you right now. We are doing social media like prep for you to come on. And our producer was like, I can't find him like looking serious. Every time he has a photo of him, he's like smiling and looks like Top Gun.
That's awesome. I'm side swiping my hair now, by the way. That's new.
Yeah, it's big time. And I see you with the AirPods too.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I'm trying to be cool.
Yeah, I see it. Thanks again to Adam for coming on and doing that. I was shocked whenever I texted him. I just texted him like, hey, dude, you want to come on? He's like, yeah. To have That's him awesome. Drop everything that he was doing and come on to talk to our listeners for 15 minutes or 10 minutes is pretty damn dope. It's a big time, man. Like having the weight of war on your shoulders is a big, big deal and something that we should be taking incredibly serious. And I've seen a lot of talk, I don't know if you guys have as well, from people saying that this is an instance of wagging the dog. Do you guys agree with that?
Maybe a little bit, but also I stand by the fact that, you know, Assad's a dick and doing this to his own people is absolutely horrible. So
there, you know, he is a dick, but you can also point to many other dictators around the world who are doing atrocities
That's true.
To clarify what wag the dog is. Wag the dog is a phrase used to indicate that attention is purposely being diverted from something of greater importance or something of lesser importance. For example, he's wagging the dog to keep you to discovering the truth about the car wreck. Now, I don't know for sure that this is a wag the dog situation because you could easily justify that using gas, sarin gas on people.
Right.
If you don't want, and I know a lot of people don't want to watch the video of the children getting gassed, but if you want to see the effects of what sarin looks like, I feel one of the greatest spots that you could do that is Google the scene or YouTube the scene where Quinn from Homeland is locked into a chamber and they drop in sarin gas and the type of effects that it has on your body. It's from everybody that I've talked to in NBC says that's a very, very good portrayal of what it actually does to your skin, what it does to your lungs. It's debilitating and it's fucking horrible. But I feel like when you're at a spot as the president of the United States, the commander in chief, and you've really committed an act of war, not on just one country, but a few countries, Iran and Russia, because they said that they didn't want you to do that. It's really an act of war on several different fronts. You want to have more focus. And I think that we can all agree on that. I feel like unilaterally, you want to make focus. You have to be in the public limelight. You have to make sure that you're doing everything to look like you're calm and collected. It's Sunday morning. It's tweet mornings at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And it doesn't look like that's where we're going. If you want to respect Trump, if Trump wants the respect of people who don't like him, these are the type of things on days like just 2 days after committing an act of war, you got to be more focused on something than other than James Comey book.
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, Trump's never going to change. I think we've seen at this point, President Trump isn't going to change. I just hope and pray that certain folks, Mattis being one of them, have his ear and he's not making these decisions willy-nilly.
Because at the end of the day, depending on where we go, the interview airing this week or next about the EOD gentleman who was in Syria, and like at the end of the day, there's real lives on the line here and real troops who are going to be extremely affected by this. So many families that are going to be extremely affected by this. And I don't understand. I'm not quite clear what the end goal is. Like, is it just wag the dog? Was it just, or like, what's the final, like, what are we doing?
I think that's the answer that Congressman Kinzinger was trying to say that they need to get to as well. And we are going to have that interview with EOD Mike, because it is an important reminder that there's people on the ground who goes in. He wants to go by EOD Mike, by the way, because he's still an active duty officer and doesn't want to let
That's a cool name, though.
EOD Mike. I would go by. That'd be my Twitter handle. So let's hear from Mike and see what he has to say. All right, now on Zero Block 30, we have the privilege of welcoming an, I think it's our first EOD guy. Mike joins us. He wanted, he's running Ironman and wanted to come on and tell a story of one of his friends who was injured in Raqqa, Syria last year. But before we do that, I need to ask you, as an EOD guy, did you hate the movie about, what was it, Hurt Locker? Did you hate Hurt Locker as much as I did?
Yes. Yeah, that's a safe assumption.
So that, everybody always asked me, because that's, I think, didn't it win an Oscar for Best Picture?
I believe it did, yeah.
So everybody always asked, like, is that movie realistic? You, as an EOD chief, why, or EOD officer, excuse me, why do you hate that movie?
Well, you know, hate's a strong word, but I will say it was completely unrealistic. I think if you remember that scene where he is tracing some det cord through the dirt and he pulls up five or six 155s at one time with one arm.
Yeah.
I mean, you're looking at like over 300 pounds of weight right there.
That's a shoulder raise.
Yeah, that was, I was pretty impressed with that. I mean, you know, it's just not how we do business in general, whether it's Army or Navy, EOD. You know, we're not reckless. We take risk. It's a risky business, but we certainly try to do what we can to keep ourselves safe.
And you're definitely not like, screw it, I'm just going to grab my weapon and my wallet and go out in town by myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that part. Yeah, you know, sometimes we do that. No, I mean, of course not. I mean, that was, you
unless
know,
you're
that
like
being overseas.
Bo Bergdahl or some shit.
Yeah. We know how that ended.
Yeah, exactly. Not great. Nobody likes to be stuck inside a cage for a couple years.
No, definitely not.
So the reason why we wanted to have you on, because you're doing Ironman, which I imagine the Navy loves, because if you're active duty still and in Ironman shape, they love that from their officers, because usually the more senior you get of the officers, you start to develop a little bit of a belly.
You do. And I'm trying to prevent that, right?
Yeah. So how did you get involved in Ironman, and what is your mission as far as being involved with Ironman?
Yeah, well, you know, it's always been something I've been, you know, just super interested in. And, you know, I like the physical challenge, the test that it presents. And then really, more than anything, you know, what you get out of it, your performance is what you put in. You can't cheat that thing. You can't shortcut it. And, unless you're using, I guess, performance-enhancing drugs. But, you know, that's obviously not how we're going down that road. But, you know, so I've been doing it since 2009. Had a break for a little while for deployments. And then, you know, I'm at a spot where I'm more on a staff tour and deployments aren't as frequent. So I've got a little more time to put into it. And, you know, I've been able to run a few since 2014. So I've done three since 2014, and I've got one more coming up, Ironman Texas, April 28th.
Okay.
Yep.
And so give people an idea, because I think that EOD has the highest operation tempo of some of the different MOSs you can have across the military. Give us an idea over your time in service. What does an operation tempo look like for an EOD officer?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you. So I'll tell you, in the height of the wars, when Iraq and Afghanistan were really kicking, Navy EOD across the board, and I'll speak for that only. I mean, we were going 6 months out, 6 months back, mm-hmm. for quite a long time. That eventually slowed, but I was looking at a deployment about every year. So 4 to 5 6 month deployment, back for a year, and then back out again. And that doesn't account for the training when you're back. So when you're back, you're not really back. Right. You know, you're gone and you're training, you're getting ready for the next deployment. So the op tempo is intense, and it can be intense, and it's slowing down a little bit, but with Syria the way that it is, and the primary use of our enemy's use of a weapon is an IED, an improvised explosive device, the need for EOD forces is great and it's increasing, so the op tempo is starting to tick back up.
So you mentioned Syria. I want to get into your friend EOD Chief Kenton Stacy. Can you kind of explain to us what happened to him?
Yeah, so it was back this past November, and I'll take another step back. So Syria is perhaps the most dangerous improvised explosive device environment we've really ever seen, and that is saying a lot.
Yeah,
knowing what Iraq was like, mm-hmm. and in its height, and then same thing with Afghanistan, not quite as bad, but you know, sophisticated. Syria, you had ISIS, you had them dug in for, you know, a few years. So they had a long time to set their defenses, and they were, and the types of IEDs they were using were very sophisticated, and they were just everywhere. So when we were coming back in, assisting the local national forces, you know, to clear back in, it was just the most dangerous environment. And we're dismounted. We don't necessarily have the support that we had when we were in Iraq. We're moving through, we're taking territory. So we don't have the robots that we would typically have. We don't have the bomb suits. So we're doing a lot of this, by hand, by sight. So that just, day in and day out takes a massive toll on the EOD operators who are out there trying to look out for themselves, but their forces and the local national forces on top of it. So, it really only takes a matter of time and, you know, before something, there's a close call, or that close call is an actual casualty. And that's unfortunately what happened to Kenton Stacy. So Kenton, you know, this was his fourth combat deployment, and I would venture to say it would not have been his last had he not been wounded. You know, he's been doing this for a while. So he was doing this very job, clearing territory that had been taken from ISIS, clearing it from ISIS fighters, and then clearing it from explosive hazards. And he was clearing a hospital in Raqqa so that the locals could come back in there to start taking care of their people and their troops. When he was clearing it, he was with local national forces, and it's thought that he was in a room clearing it, and accidentally a local national force individual triggered an IED, and Kenton was right on top of it and suffered severe wounds. He should have been killed, but if it weren't for the heroic efforts of his army buddies who were with him, we work a lot with army. They saved his life. I mean, they went to work on him for hours on end until they could get him back to a casualty collection point. Constant CPR. He received so many different units of blood, or a number of units of blood, to keep him alive. And Kenton's a fighter, and he was able to get through that traumatic portion to get to a stabilized hospital, a stabilized condition to get to a hospital, and then back to the States. But unfortunately, his wounds are critical. So he's a quadriplegic. He is blind in an eye, and right now he is needing a ventilator to breathe. And so with that, he can't speak because the ventilator going through the trachea. So he hasn't been able to speak. He hasn't been able to talk to his wife. Hasn't been able to talk to his kids in quite a long time. The short-term goal is to get him off that ventilator so that they can do reconstructive surgery on his trachea so he can at least start speaking. But that, you know, that's the short story of where he's at right now and how it happened.
Unbelievable. And if that's not enough, his family also have some pretty difficult things that they're doing. Can you tell us about Kenton's son?
Yeah, I sure can. So tragic story in and of itself with Kenton. But so Kenton's so he's a father of four, married, a father of four. His oldest son is has cerebral palsy, and Logan is his oldest son. He is in and out of a wheelchair as well. So his wife right now is perhaps one of the strongest people I've ever met. She is holding that entire family together through sheer determination and grit. And, you know, when you start looking at this situation and the long-term needs of this family, you know, sheer determination and grit's great, but it's not going to be enough. So I wanted to do what I could to try to help. And that's eventually how I'm sitting here talking to you on your podcast. I thought, you know, I've been doing Ironmans for a while, as we talked. I was doing Ironman Texas already. Where Kenton is getting cared for is at Memorial Hermann. And that is the main sponsor for Ironman Texas. And so I just thought, you know, this is just too fortuitous. We need to take advantage of that. He's pretty much there. I'm running it. Let's try to raise some money. And so we reached out to a bunch of folks. We started raising funds, which has been great. Talked to Ironman. They're on board. They're very helpful, and the hospital as well. So right now for me, it's just getting the word out to try to give as much help and assistance to this family that's just going to need so much of it in the years to come.
All right. And this is kind of an uncomfortable part. So as a vet myself, and you obviously know that there is SGLI, there's all these things that come into play when somebody is injured like that. tell us why this needs to go above and beyond the insurance that's already provided by the military.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, the insurance is great, you know, and they're taking care. They are taking care of Kenton to the best of their ability. But when you start looking at, for instance, the four kids, so Lindsay, Stacy, Kenton's wife, they are stationed out in San Diego. Mm-hmm. He's getting cared for in Texas. So she's constantly having to go back and forth. Mm-hmm. So the need for childcare, long-term childcare, is, well, I'd say it's desperate. I mean, they can only rely on family so much and friends right. so much before it becomes a burden to them. And long-term childcare, especially when you're talking about a child with cerebral palsy, is not cheap.
Right.
And then you're looking at, you know, eventually Kenton's going to get out of the hospital. He's a quadriplegic. His son is in a wheelchair. The transportation of that family to and from places just day to day is going to be an issue. So we're looking at, all right, how do we get a vehicle for them that has that is wheelchair accessible, that can get them from place to place, and then a house on top of it. And so, I mean, it just starts to spiral out of control. And then he will get medically retired. But, you know, that medical retirement, as you know, it's one thing, but it's certainly not going to be enough to take care of a family of six, to include those medical expenses and just the associated costs really that come along with it. Yes, he will get cared for and there are people who are helping. But ultimately, if you're looking at quality of life for that family, there's going to be a lot of help necessary to keep that up at a good level.
And as a military community, we look at something that's so tragic. And you have, like, I view the VA and I view the insurance as like a baseline of what every single family that goes through some of that deserves. And then you have guys like yourself who've served with them and alongside, and you say, hey, the baseline is not good enough. We need to go above and beyond. And I feel like that's what you're doing here. We really appreciate you taking the time and getting the story. I promise you, the Stoolie Nation that listens to this podcast, we are going to answer the call and we'll do some big things. We appreciate you bringing this story to our attention. This story you might have heard a little bit before, because this is what President Trump mentioned in the State of the Union too. It was got a lot of notoriety there. But just because it gets notoriety at one point doesn't mean it needs to fall to the wayside. Your friend is still in the hospital. The wife is still going back and forth, and the children need a lot as well. And you're doing a great job, Mike. So thank you very much for going above and beyond what is called for of an officer for people. And you're doing great things, my friend.
Thanks, chaps. I really appreciate your time and support on this one.
All right, Mike, we'll talk to you again soon. We'd love to have you on to get more down into the nitty-gritty of what EOD. So if you have any more stories and you want to reach out to us again, feel free.
All right. Thanks to Mike for taking time out of his schedule as well. That was supposed to air in like a week, but I thought it was very poignant to get to the bottom of it. And it made perfect sense. ISIS has been in that area for years and had the ability to really fortify positions. I mean, Collins, when you go through, when you're doing tactical training, you're doing the ability to take over a spot. That's one of the first things that you do when you occupy an area is fortify your position, correct?
Right. That's absolutely correct. So, I mean, you're talking about more than just like a week. You're going to have very fortified positions. You're going to know that area backwards and forwards. So, I mean, it's decided advantage when you have that much time.
And, Kate, I'm sure you remembered even from MCT scenes where you have to draw where your little M2 is going to be. You have to draw where your 240 is going to be. You have to draw where your machine guns are going to be. You do all these different things. ISIS has had the ability to do that for a long time. Marines and combat units, we'd be happy if we got 2 or 3 days to do that. They've had years to be able to encompass themselves with IEDs to make it incredibly difficult. And I also didn't even think about, whenever I watched Hurt Locker for the first time, how heavy 155s are. To rip up five from the ground in a shoulder shrug is pretty damn impressive.
Oh, yeah. There's a reason, you know, why a lot of folks in the FA community, field artillery, are rather large, because those rounds are none too light.
So just do a shoulder raise with one is with five of them is pretty impressive.
You guys have never done that?
Not in a while, no.
Sorry.
All right. So what would you guys like to see the possible outcome? I think that we are only 48 hours removed from the strike. Where do we go from here? Where do you envision we going from here?
Kate?
Oh, thanks, Con.
I can tell you were ready. I wanted to throw it right to you.
I honestly don't know. The situation is so confusing. It really is. I've been reading up on it. There's so many different angles and parts to this. It's a proxy war. It's a civil war. We got a little dog wagon in there. Like, Ideally, I would like Assad to just fall down the stairs and break his neck, and then everything's magically great. But I just don't know. I would like to see Assad taken out, honestly, but then you have a power vacuum, and who's going to take his place? I'm sure. I just don't know. It's kind of, it is a really complicated situation.
It's super tough, and I don't know if you guys think this, but does this have some shades of Iraq 2003?
I don't know. I feel like it's a very different situation because Iraq didn't have the backing of any other nations. You'll have with Iran and with Russia on deck, I feel that makes a very different type of situation altogether. I am concerned about is what's going to happen with Russia. I feel Kinziger calmed my fears a little bit with that by saying that Russia's two front lines are very good, and after that, they're not very deep. So that's good to hear from somebody who would definitely know. But the statement from the Russian embassy, which I'll read it to you, statement by the Russian ambassador to the U.S. On the strikes in Syria, the worst apprehensions have come true. Our warnings have been left unheard. A pre-designated scenario is being implemented. Again, we are being threatened. We warn that such actions will not be left without consequence. All responsibility for them rests with Washington, London, and Paris. Insulting the president of Russia is unacceptable and inadmissible. The U.S., the processor of the greatest arsenal of chemical weapons, has no moral right to blame other countries. I'm cool with Russia being pissed because fuck them. Like, really?
Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah.
I really don't give a shit.
I remember
we had that
big strike on them. We killed how many Russian contractors?
500.
500. Speaking of shades of Iraq, this to me has shades of Afghanistan all over it. I mean, here we go again with Russia through another country, and look how it worked out with us before. Like, what is the end goal? Like, we need a. I just wish somebody would like lay out a serious game plan here because.
And the reason I partly say shades of Iraq, or as Kate, you pointed out, maybe shades of Afghanistan, is maybe our leadership can look at those two conflicts and learn from our mistakes, and hopefully the decision that is made in Syria going forward has a better result than a decade plus war on the horizon, because I don't want that. I don't want that. I don't know that our military can just withstand being stretched that thin again and put on another country. So it certainly does not bode well if that's the decision. Hopefully it's not, but we definitely need to have a clear action going forward.
Can you imagine the hellfire and brimstone that would rain down if a country killed 500 American military workers?
Yeah, yeah. It would be insane.
That's a lot of people.
It's a ton. I mean, I guess the basic end game of our serious special is that we don't fucking know. We appreciate you listening and getting some background from Kinziger and finding out what's on the ground. But nobody knows, and part of that is because the DOD right now is being less transparent than they have in a long time. And I understand that, as Mattis being at the front was so closely related and so closely removed from his military service. I think in some parts it is okay to be a little bit secretive what you're doing, but at other times Americans need to have their worries quelled, and I don't feel like being secretive about a lot of things does that.
Yeah, we don't need President Trump tweeting what we're going to do all over the world, but we also don't need to be in the dark. We need to find some middle ground there and rest there.
Yeah. And just really quick, I'd be interested to hear like what our listeners think, because when the news first broke the other night, I actually found out while I was watching Rough and Rowdy 3 by Barstool Big Cat. he announced, I was like, is this how I just found out? But the Twitter blew up, and I would be interested to hear what our listeners think. Like, what would you like to see happen? What do you think the end goal should be? Do you think this is right or wrong? Like, I just want to hear from everybody. And if you guys have good articles or something that thinks would help me, because I'm confused as fuck right now. just hit us up at the @ZeroBlog30 on Twitter, or slide into our DMs on Instagram.
Or the height of what you would like to know, like type of guests that you would like to have us have on, so you can get a better idea. Because I think a lot of times when you go to different news sources, there is an angle. I mean, there is an angle with the Washington Post, the New York Times, Fox News, Breitbart. No matter where you go, they have a little bit of agenda. We try to be as nonpartisan. You know, I don't like President Trump, but I am equally on par of like, I'm ready and willing and able, and have done so in the past, of shitting on the Obama administration as well.
So we'll go after both sides. We'll take it as much we can do. We will be as fair and balanced, to steal a quote from Fox News. We will be as fair and balanced as we possibly can be. Sound the retreat.